ਹਾਜ਼ਰੀਨ ਅੱਜ ਅਸੀਂ ਬੜੀ ਹੀ ਖਾਸਮ ਖਾਸ ਮੁਲਾਕਾਤ ਕਰਨ ਲੱਗੇ ਹਾਂ ਸਟੂਡੀਓ ਵਿੱਚ ਮੇਰੇ ਨਾਲ ਇਸ ਵੇਲੇ ਬੈਠੇ ਹਨ ਮੀਨਾ ਸਿੰਘ ਨਾ ਤਾਂ ਤੁਹਾਨੂੰ ਸ਼ਾਇਦ ਲੱਗੇਗਾ ਕਿ ਕੋਈ ਵੀ ਭਾਰਤੀ ਪਿਛੋਕੜ ਦੀ ਮਹਿਲਾ ਦਾ ਹੋ ਸਕਦਾ ਹੈ ਪਰ ਸ਼ਾਇਦ ਤੁਹਾਨੂੰ ਜਾਣ ਕੇ ਬਹੁਤ ਹੀ ਹੈਰਾਨੀ ਹੋਵੇਗੀ ਕਿ ਮੀਨਾ ਸਿੰਘ ਦਾ ਪਿਛੋਕੜ ਐਬੋਰੀਜਨਲ ਭਾਈਚਾਰੇ ਨਾਲ ਰਲਦਾ ਹੈ ਅਤੇ ਜੀ ਮੈਂ ਬੜੇ ਹੀ ਮਾਣ ਅਤੇ ਸਤਿਕਾਰ ਨਾਲ ਪਹਿਲਾਂ ਉਹਨਾਂ ਨੂੰ ਸਵਾਗਤ ਆਖਣਾ ਚਾਹਾਂਗੀ ਜ਼ਾਹਿਰ ਹੈ ਮੀਨਾ ਬਿਲਕੁਲ ਵੀ ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਨਹੀਂ ਸਮਝਦੇ ਪਰ ਫਿਰ ਵੀ ਬਹੁਤ ਬਹੁਤ ਸਵਾਗਤ ਹੈ ਵੈਲਕਮ ਮੀਨਾ ਵੈਲਕਮ ਟੂ ਐਸ ਪੀ ਐਸ ਪੰਜਾਬੀ ਪ੍ਰੋਗਰਾਮ
ਥੈਂਕ ਯੂ ਸੋ ਮਚ ਫਾਰ ਹੈਵਿੰਗ ਮੀ
ਨਾਓ ਆਈ ਵਾਜ਼ ਜਸਟ ਟੈਲਿੰਗ ਮਾਈ ਲਿਸਨਰਸ ਦੈਟ ਯੂ ਹੈਵ ਦ ਸੇਮ ਸਰਨੇਮ ਐਸ ਪ੍ਰੋਬਬਲੀ ਮਿਲੀਅਨਸ ਆਫ ਆਸਟ੍ਰੇਲੀਅਨਸ ਆਫ ਇੰਡੀਅਨ ਡਿਸੈਂਟ ਓਰ ਹੰਡਰਡਸ ਆਫ ਥਾਊਸੈਂਡਸ ਆਫ ਆਸਟ੍ਰੇਲੀਅਨਸ ਆਫ ਇੰਡੀਅਨ ਡਿਸੈਂਟ Tell us a little bit more about your name, yeah. The story behind it.
So my name's Meena Singh. Well, I'll give you my full name, Meena Pushpa Singh. So a very Indian name. My dad is Indian. He was born in Fiji. And his father, so my grandfather, was born in Jaipur in Rajasthan. Okay. And when he was a child, about 10 years old, he moved to Fiji with his parents, as lots of Indians did at yes. that particular time. So my dad's one of seven boys and has three sisters as well.
Wow. And and then he moved to Australia when?
Yeah, so he came to Australia late 1950s, early 1960s mm-hmm. and met my mum in Melbourne. So my mum's Aboriginal, Yorta Yorta. So Yorta Yorta's up middle northern part of Victoria, so Shepherd and Echuca and also over the river. And they met in Melbourne and the rest is history, and my two sisters and I, and yeah.
Wow. So here we have a Yorta Yorta woman yeah. with the last name Singh.
Yes, exactly.
Which is absolutely fabulous. Now, I must tell my listeners that you work at Victorian Legal Aid as the Associate Director of Aboriginal Legal Services. Which is just amazing in its own to have someone of your mixed heritage in that position. But before we talk more about what you do mm-hmm. over there, what about your own identity? Who do you perceive yourself as?
Both. I'm both Indian and I'm both Yorta Yorta. I can't ever say I'm one or the other without acknowledging the other. To do so would be denying half of my identity. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I am the Aboriginal girl with the Indian name. And it's funny, my dad named us all, my sisters and I, but I was the only one who ended up with a very Indian name.
Yes.
And he actually named me after his favourite actress, Meena Kumari.
Wow.
And my middle name, Pushpa, is from one of his sisters. So, okay. yeah, I got the very Indian name.
If I may say so, you yeah. actually resemble Meena Kumari.
Oh, that's
in some
so
way.
Kind. I've yes, seen pictures of her. She's gorgeous. And I understand she used to do very dramatic works and
yes.
had a very interesting personal life and stuff. So, yeah.
That was the nature of Indian cinema back
yeah,
then.
So yeah, yeah.
Overly dramatic.
Yeah.
So you are our Meena Kumari, yeah. I have to say that. Now, when you say you embrace your Indianness mm. as well, mm. how much of India do you know? How much of Indian culture do you know? Indian language?
A little bit of Indian language, a little bit of Hindi, enough to probably get me into trouble, but maybe not to get out of trouble. I think, ironically, it was my mum who tried to make sure that we knew Hindi. And I think that comes from a couple of things, being Aboriginal and being denied the opportunity to speak in language and share that culture.
Yes.
Language is very important to her and to our culture. I think, this is just my view, but I think often language and ensuring culture is passed down is often on the maternal side of the family,
yes.
and mothers are very much responsible in those early engagement with their children and such in language. So I grew up, you know, predominant language is English, but speaking a smattering also of Hindi and Aboriginal words as well. So I remember my mum would have children's books, like alphabet books, mm-hmm. and would have little white stickers under the words and pictures and have the words in Hindi. So
oh.
she could teach herself but also teach us, so that when we went to Fiji to see my father's side of the family, she could try and interact as much as possible. So,
wow. So your yeah. mother spoke some Hindi as well?
Yeah, she tried to speak some Hindi
Wonderful.
As well, yeah. And my Indian relatives absolutely adore my mum. I think she's fantastic.
Well, you can show off a little bit of the language skills that you have. So tell us, which words do you know?
I don't want to just... Well, you know, you get to a certain age and all you want to learn is swear words. So I want to make sure I won't say any of those. But Tumke Se Hai, TK, Hamanam Meena, Tumanam Konchi Hai. And so, of course, it's,
yes.
you know, it's the Hindi that was spoken in Fiji, which often had lots of different influences and such. So I guess it's a slightly different version of Hindi. But I love overhearing people speak in language and such and
yes.
seeing if I can pick up certain things. And the way I look, I think, you know, most Indians sort of look at me and sort of think, oh, she might be Indian, she might not, kind of thing. And it's funny, I sometimes surprise a few people. Like, I was in a lift once with a couple and their young child, and they were getting out of the lift, and the mum said to the child, jaldi karo, like, hurry up. And I said, jaldi karo, like, I repeat, and they just looked at me like, what? Like, she is in there. I like to muck things up every now and then.
That's really good. And what about the Aboriginal side of things?
So, yeah.
Especially for new migrants who have recently come to Australia, what is it that they must know about the Aboriginal people of Australia?
Yeah. So for me personally, I grew up knowing that I was Aboriginal, that we were Yorta Yorta people. My mum was very strong in making sure we grew up with a strong cultural heritage and strong identity. We didn't grow up in community as such, so we didn't have many family members on my mum's side around me. So that really came as we got older, and once I got to go to uni and be more part of community and stuff. It's really interesting hearing different communities' understanding of Aboriginal culture, particularly newly arrived or migrant communities. Yes. And I think in some ways there's lots of similarities that people can take away in terms of identity and such. But I think it's really important that people understand what our history is in terms of not just our culture, and, you know, and I guess the attractive things like, you know, artwork and language and customs and such, but understand the processes over the last 200 plus years that have been the policies, the laws that have been enforced on Aboriginal people that create continuing disadvantage today. And the experience of Indigenous peoples often isn't something that a lot of people can understand, the idea of being made to feel that you're not welcome in your own country. Yes. And, you know, I've got a migrant background, I've got an Indigenous background. Yes. So in lots of ways, the perception society has of me is very much as an other, that yes. I'm not part of the mainstream Australian identity and such. Yeah. So I think it's really important for people to know that, you know, before British invasion, we had over 500 languages, communities around this country. Yeah. And there's a fantastic map that you can get. If you just Google Aboriginal languages map, you'll find a fantastic map that sets out all those languages.
Yes.
And that so many of those languages were not allowed to be spoken, virtually all languages weren't allowed to be spoken as part of a process of firstly trying to wipe us out, or then, you know, assimilate us, and you know, all sorts of processes to deny our existence.
Yeah.
And the other thing is as well, our history is an oral history. Our customs are oral, and they're passed in that way. So, you know, when you remove the ability to speak in language and you break up families, you remove all the reinforcement of those cultures and that identity and such. So for a lot of us, it's rebuilding our identity and understanding and learning more and more about ourselves. Mm. So I would say to any new migrant arriving, I would say to anyone, take the chance to learn and find out as much as you can, and don't rely on stereotypes. You know, stereotypes are based on falsehoods, and yes. go and find out your own reality about and interact, and lots of different places that you can really connect with culture and community and find out a lot. Yeah.
Meena, I'm also interested to ask you something from a different perspective. Being a migrant yourself, as you just alluded to, does the Aboriginal community look at all non-Aboriginal people as the same? I do realise that the British invasion was a very difficult thing to come to grips with. And more recently, the migration into Australia, though, is Asian, not the European or the British. So does the Indigenous community see a difference in the type of migrants that are coming, or the type of new Australians, or are they all regarded the same?
Well, migration is very much tied up with history and what's happening in the world and such. So obviously the arrival of the British is very much tied up with those colonising powers and such. And the British are perceived in a very particular way. And that's because of the injustices that came out of that. I can only speak for myself.
Yes.
I can't really speak for, you know, community, and everyone has different opinions and such. Mm. But I know there are a lot of Aboriginal people who feel really hurt and frustrated around the negative sentiment towards asylum seekers or refugees and people who come here seeking safety and shelter. And but for Aboriginal people, everyone else is a migrant, basically.
Yes.
So it's really frustrating when you hear those really negative attitudes and such. I think what's even more frustrating is that sometimes those negative attitudes towards more migration or asylum seekers and refugees coming to Australia is somehow conflated with Aboriginal rights. And it's like, no, that's, you know, we're talking about fundamental decency to people. And, you know, and our cultures were that, you know, we sought permission to go onto other people's territories and land, you know, boundaries of countries were marked out in certain ways and you would seek permission to enter other people's land. So it's part of our cultures to understand that you seek permission and you enter the land and you respect it. And so, you know, they're not ideals that are disconnected from the ideas of sovereign nations and, and such and respecting other people's lands. So that power of the British and the colonisation, that came with a very specific, you know, set of values and agendas.
Okay, moving on to your work, and you've just mentioned about social justice and matters to do with the law. Now, within Victorian Legal Aid and managing the Aboriginal services at such a senior level, describe the work that you do. How many people are you able to help out? And I'm also mindful of the stereotypes that you just mentioned. And a lot of people do have a stereotype about the Aboriginal community. So does your work break the stereotype? Just tell us a little bit more about that.
I kind of see myself as an internal consultant for the organisation in lots of ways and really looking across how do we service Aboriginal clients and community in much more inclusive, culturally safe ways. Of all of our services, about 4% go to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, which is a really quite a small percentage. When we look at the impact of invasion and removal policies and disconnection with culture and stuff, what we see manifesting today is overrepresentation in the criminal justice system. We see rates of Aboriginal women going to prison is ridiculously high, and something like 80% of Aboriginal women in prison have been a victim of family violence. So we've got really high rates of incarceration. We've got really high rates of Aboriginal women and children being victims of family violence, Aboriginal children being removed from families, all these things that you can see are a direct result of these policies and practices. So what we're trying to do is ensure that whenever we work with an Aboriginal client, that we're providing them with the services that meet their cultural needs, that aren't based on stereotypes, that are really addressing what their specific needs are and trying to link them up with, say, particular services that will also respond with that. So there's a few different aspects to it. Firstly, there's different laws that require you to specifically take into account a person, whether or not they're Aboriginal or not. So by all legislation, you have to take into consideration whether a person's Aboriginal and what that means in terms of cultural responsibilities and ties. Mental Health Act looks at things like, you know, how does a person's Aboriginality and culture fit into their treatment?
Yes.
Your Victorian Charter of Human Rights looks at how do we address cultural rights of Aboriginal people. So there's all these different specific laws that require us. So on one hand, there's a professional obligation in terms of how we do our work. But on the other hand, it's us providing a service that people can find welcoming and accessible and easy to get to. For so many people, coming to a mainstream service like us is really daunting. So, you know, we've got services such as Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service. We've got the Family Violence and Prevention Legal Service, both of which are services specifically for Aboriginal clients. But they're underfunded. They can't service everyone, you know. And so we need to make sure that if an Aboriginal person comes to us, they're safe and they're feeling okay.
The Aboriginal people have lived here for hundreds of thousands of years. And obviously, they would have had their own legal system, their own way of how they organise their society for so many generations. Now, is this a clash for them to then conform to the modern way in which the Australian law is applied and used?
If you talk about points of first contact when the British first came and, you know, that real clash on of British laws and British expectations and understandings and how people had lived for, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, you get that really direct clash between a very individual British rights-based system and collective Indigenous systems that really are about looking after the group, looking after the community, understanding, you know, what everyone's needs are and recognising that everyone has a part to play. You know, that's just one really obvious headbutt between individual rights and collective rights of a group. But, you know, law's really frustrating because, you know, studying law is really different to, say, studying health or medicine or sciences, things like that. When you study law for an Aboriginal person, what you're studying is this system that's been imposed on your country. And you're also studying about yourself and how this law's been used to take things away. And, you know, it's that classic thing of just because something's lawful doesn't mean it's moral or it's just. And that's definitely been the experience for our community. And, you know, removal of children was lawful, doesn't mean it was right, you know. So what we're finding more and more, particularly in Victoria, is that we're trying to incorporate a really specific Aboriginal lens or focus or way of doing things onto existing legal system. So the best example is our koori courts. So koori is a word that is used to refer to southeastern Aboriginal people. Koori courts are basically courts for sentencing people. All the same laws under the Sentencing Act and case law apply, but the process is very different. Okay. So alongside the magistrate giving you a sentence, you've got two elders from the community, and they'll sit in what's known basically as a sentencing circle. They'll all sit around a table. Everyone's on the same level, and it's very much a discussion about the individual's circumstances and how they're going to deal with things. And it's really trying to address what's led a person to this situation, their circumstances. And it's that idea of being accountable not only to the law, the black letter law, but also being accountable to your community and what that means. Okay. So that's a really clear example of trying to incorporate our culture and identity into existing processes.
So on average, how many people of Aboriginal community would you be helping, say, on a monthly basis or on an annual basis?
Wow, that's the tough question. I always think of how many services we deliver to people rather than how many actual people, and I should know that. I honestly can't answer that. The most services are delivered in criminal law and child protection in terms of Aboriginal clients, depending on where we are in the state, it varies. So if you look at, say, our Shepparton regional office, I think 1/5 of their clients are Aboriginal. So that's really high. But in other areas, it'll be much lower. So it depends on where the region is and what the type of service is. Lots of people know us for our duty lawyer and our criminal law services. Mm-hmm. Lots of people don't know that we do things like, we've got a telephone advice line that can give you information and advice on a whole range of things, you know, things around tenancy or mental health, social security, you know, if you've had a debt raised against you. There's a whole range of other matters that impact on your day-to-day life that you can call up legal aid about and get more information about. Yeah.
Been absolutely fascinating to chat to you, not just about your work, but about Indigenous issues. Yeah. I think most fascinatingly about your own cultural heritage. So it's just been wonderful to be able to pick your brains on so many different things. If there's one message that you want our listeners to take away from today, what would that be?
I guess it's approach everyone and everything with an open heart and an open mind, and look past stereotypes and go out and try and learn and find out more. And, you know, don't just rely on maybe what mainstream media says about certain things. Find out more from community themselves about Aboriginal culture and identity. And I'll just finish with a nice little story that I always think is really great. But I know in Hindi, depending on whether you, with aunts and uncles and different titles given, if it's your mother's sister and her husband, and or your mother's brother and his wife, and it, so the titles allow you to instantly place where everyone is and such. And so I'd go to Fiji and all my relatives would have all these different titles.
Masi,
yeah, yeah, exactly. And Malsa and Masi. And yeah. And then we'd come and totally ruin it with just auntie and uncle. But but Mum always said that's what we had in language as well. We had different titles so that different people knew where they were placed in the family kinship relationship structure and such. And I always just think that's a perfect example of how much similarity there is between cultures and communities, and that's what we should be focusing on.
Absolutely. And because we are right in the middle of the National Languages Competition at SBS at the moment, we're encouraging all children to tell us why it is important to learn a language. And you're in a perfect and unique position here with this amazing heritage of yours.
Yeah.
Why is learning a language important?
Oh, you look really cool when you didn't just whip out another language. I think that's that's not a main reason. It's culture, it's identity. My dad, I think, was like probably a lot of migrants. His father is Polish. And it's interesting, I compare the experiences of our fathers as migrant dads. You know, neither of them really taught us their language. And you know, it's just such a connection to family and to community, and it just makes you so much stronger in your identity. And, you know, as an Aboriginal person, we've had our languages stopped from being spoken and in some places our language lost. And language is how we share, and it's just so important to everything.
I think what will stay with me is something you said earlier, that it's the mothers that pass on the language. Mm. And to me, there's a reason why we call it our mother tongue.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, our languages actually nurture us. Thank you very much for coming here today,
Thank
Meena.
You. Thank
it's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you. And good luck with the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.